This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Whoops, actually I need a minute. There we go. All right, 10 seconds. My friends, I am Vivian McPeak, and this is Hemp Present. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hemp Present, email me at hempresent@gmail.com. Ilona Kearney is a veteran, the wife of a union worker, and a forgiveness coach. With a background in military intelligence as a computer analyst, Ilona gained valuable insights into national security, defense policy, and veterans affairs, shaping her commitment to serving those who have served. As a single mother and a homeschooling parent, she self-published books and founded a nonprofit organization dedicated to educating youth about the legislative process, showcasing her dedication to civil engagement and education. And this year, Ilona is a candidate for Washington State Governor, and I've asked her here to join me today to tell us about her campaign. Welcome, Ilona, to Cannabis Radio.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. You know, you have just impressive credentials as someone who's been active in public service and civic engagement. I couldn't even squeeze them all into the intro. Before we dive into your platform issues, Washington State's Attorney General is running for governor, also as a Democrat. What do you believe sets you apart from Attorney General Bob Ferguson? As far as your vision for the state of Washington, do you have specific policy disagreements with the platform he's running on, which emphasizes public safety and the state ferry system?
Well, first off, about the platform, I feel that he lies about it all, just like we always say politicians do. They make promises but don't deliver, and he has not shown to deliver on any of them. But what makes me different in these aspects is that I have lived experiences. My opponents, they think of us more as data and statistics.
So basically what you're saying is that you're not a typical politician.
Correct. Yes.
On your campaign website, you state three core values: unity, community, and support. Can you expand upon how you intend to actualize them in an administration, and also how they might align with any ideas you have on cannabis and hemp in Washington State?
Yes. So let me break those down. So community means we're not coming in to change communities. Every community has its own culture. They have their trust, and they know each other, which that's kind of been broken lately. But we're coming to get to know those communities, see what those communities need. The second part is support. Support the community. Support what they need. A lot of times, we always see the politicians, they say, oh, we created this program, we're giving more funding, but the funding does not reach the people that are supposed to help. And we want to ensure that these things reach where, you know, go and do what they say that they're supposed to be doing. And unity, when you make sure that the community are stakeholders at the table, and, you know, like we have all these stakeholders, big corporations that are in the politicians' pockets, politicians with the lobbyists, all of these people are working together, but nobody's including the communities. So that's where how it would affect the hemp and the cannabis is making sure we're all included. They're included in at the table of how this is affecting them, the retailers, the small business retailers, as well as the people who utilizes those services.
Yeah, you can't spell community without unity, right? And I can't remember a time in my 64 years when, or 65 years, I keep forgetting. I can't remember a time when there was less unity in this country, especially politically. So really what you're saying is you don't think that the politicians that are elected representatives are have the concerns and the priorities of the working people of this country, and especially of this state, at the forefront of what they're really, working for. You think they're working for the corporations?
Correct.
They're donors, right?
Yes.
Let's review your platform planks, starting with mental health. As you know, our state has a major crisis of unhoused people, ranking sixth in the nation. The last report estimated 28,000 Washingtonians sleeping on our sidewalks, living on our streets and RVs, and in tents on public property. I've never seen anything like it. It's everywhere. It's in my community. You drive down the freeway, there's tent camps on the side of the road. And in addition to gentrification with rising rents, we have a major opioid crisis, as well as a large mental health component to our state's unhoused status quo. Starting with mental health, what would you do differently in terms of how our state addresses and manages mental health issues specifically?
Well, like I said before, I have lived experiences in this. I have, when I was in middle school, I was in and out of the hospitals for suicide and depression. And today I'm a living testament of, how I've overcame and my forgiveness coaching. But also, my healing process wasn't the status quo process that they utilize when you go into the therapy office. They want to heavily medicate you and just have you sit there and talk about your problems. But we need to first diversify our portfolio on how we're treating mental health because everybody's not going to heal the same way. Everyone does not receive the message from, like if I'm at this therapist, I might not receive it as well as I have this therapist over here that can talk my lingo and get on my level as well as someone else might. So diversification, I know that our current administration has shut down a lot of facilities. When I'm talking to police officers, they say that we're supposed to offer these resources, but there's not enough resources if these people were to actually take them. And so it's making sure that we're having a seat at the table and make sure that we are being efficient and effective with what we're doing by having all aspects at the table. Because there's nothing worse than having a politician come in our communities and say, oh, I'm going to do this, this, and this for you, but you don't really know the gap between what you're saying that you're going to do and how it's going to reach us.
Yeah, you mentioned healing. There's a large stigma related to mental health issues, and I believe you're a forgiveness coach. Could you just quickly talk about that?
Yes, and forgiveness coaching, I overcame a lot. They said I was a deepest depression, that I was going to be a zombie for the rest of my life and be heavily medicated, which I'm not. But I learned that it was about really for me in our communities, we don't learn to set boundaries. We have this open door policies. Oh, that's just family. No matter how bad, like we keep a lot of secrets and family secrets that we don't feel like we have a safe space. So I learned to break those barriers in my own life and set standards with boundaries with family members and other people to where I'm a much happier person now.
Nice, nice. In my last question, I mentioned gentrification as rents have risen dramatically while inflation hammers families trying to provide for their basic needs. And even when inflation goes down, the rate goes down, the prices stay static, they don't go down. Our unhoused situation is increasingly starting to feel like the new normal. Lax COVID policies have largely subsided, yet there appears to be no clear plan to address the issue of homelessness or houselessness, unhoused people. Attorney General Bob Ferguson's got a very detailed plans on his campaign website about how he'd approach public safety, how he'd approach the fentanyl crisis, but there's really nothing there about homelessness specifically. And Republican candidate Dave Reichert's website presents very little in terms of any actual policies, relying mostly on vague issue descriptions and values statements. What would be your plans to address the issue of our state's unhoused population? What would you do differently from what's being done?
People have a, I guess you say, a negative look on homeless in the unhoused community that I've been homeless, a single mother, veteran, and I had income and I didn't realize I was homeless until my kid's school told me that. And I was like, oh, I'm homeless now that I say that out loud. So to address the situation, it's not a one size fit all. We keep putting everybody in one category of people just think drug addicts out there on the streets, but there's more than one category. So I would open up the surplus land. We're spending millions of dollars just moving people place to place of relocation camps. However, if we open up those surplus lands, move the homeless there, and then start separating down what the needs are. So people who have income, not on drugs, and they have income and it's just a issue with the affordable housing, then open up these surplus buildings, fix them up. There's small business owners who are out here looking for government contracts, have them fix them up, bring them up to code, move our families in there for that, the affordability. Those who want to get off drugs, bring the wraparound services out there. And then also, when people get off the drugs, you also need to give them a plan after that as to what to do to feel like they're hopeful instead of hopeless to going back on.
I really connect with your statement that they're not all the same homeless people, that there's a variety of reasons that people are unhoused in Washington State. And I actually read a stat that said as many as 30% of the houseless people, unhoused people, are actually employed. They just can't afford first, last, clean fee deposit, and insane rents that we have right now, especially in the urban centers. I'm pretty positive that Bob Ferguson or Dave Reichert have never been homeless. So you would bring a very unique perspective, I'm sure. And we need to go to a break. So we're going to come back with more unique perspectives here in just a minute. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back with Alona Kearney. All right, there's that 10 seconds of silence. excuse me. Let me clear my, let me turn my mic off so I can really clear my throat. All right, it's going great. We're just going to dive right back in. So, 10 seconds. We're back with Alona Kearney. Alona, you list restorative justice as a campaign plank. Restorative justice is, in my opinion, an approach to justice that aims to repair the harmed and the victims, giving offenders an opportunity to redeem themselves while including them in the process, as long as they show that they understand how their actions have harmed society. On your website, you say, quote, living in a historically disadvantaged community and having family members who have experienced the justice system firsthand, I'm a staunch advocate for second chances and plan to implement preventative maintenance programs and restorative justice to bring about meaningful reform in our state. What are your thoughts on restorative justice? Why it would be an important component of our approach to criminal justice, and how that might intersect with your reduced recidivism policies?
My view on that is my husband, he's been in prison before and he served his time. And I call him the poster child of what restorative justice should look like. And he's ran for city council. He's out here active in the community, as well as other members that have joined, come along and join our team who have nonprofits out here that are doing things to try to help. First, make sure that we grab those youth from not walking down that path, as well as helping those who are coming back out to not go back into repeating, being repeat offenders, of giving them hope and saying you can do better and you can be more active and a good positive influence in society. So that's why I believe, if you don't forgive people and help them to be able to do better, then we'll just have a whole, what do you call it? Vigilante society out here, and we don't want that. So we want to be able to bring people in and help them to move forward while also making sure those families are healing, because sometimes people are still not having gotten over what has happened, and we want them to heal as well. Like I've been the victim of having my car stolen back here past in October by the Kia boys. So, we don't want these things to happen because it's a burden on us in society and our communities. We end up feeling like we've paid for them for it as a victim, but You know, we have to bridge that gap by bringing everyone to the table and finding ways to mend and move forward.
Your website also mentions equitable taxation and the necessity of funding essential services, and references that you have a unique experience yourself coming from a historically disadvantaged community. Can you share your thoughts on adjusting?
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Washington's tax code to make it more fair for working and low-income Washingtonians, and also your ideas on how your own influences, your own history influences your positions.
So with create a more equitable taxes, that's where it's going to take a multifaceted approach, is, you know, helping out the small businesses with incentives, even with businesses in certain areas where, like in Seattle, it's going to cost them a lot because they're paying a lot of taxes and then their property value is not going to go up. So giving them incentives to be able to catch up on some things, those are, you know, helping out with the small businesses in our communities. There was this, it's going to also take working across the aisle with politicians. I know our governor, Inslee, we could have had lower taxes, but being that state representative Stokesbury presented a budget that would have lowered our taxes, he was Republican. So we didn't go with that budget because it was a Republican presentation. So I don't like those things that I see in government. If it's something that is best for everyone, then we should be working together, not once we get voted in, oh, it's a party thing. If our party didn't present it, we're not going to do it. No, we work together in unity for the best of all Washingtonians.
And I think that's what you mean when you say that you're not driven by party affiliation and that you put people at ahead of party. We're the most partisan, you know. I mean, I'm going to say the elephant in the room, Donald Trump, has kind of, you know, things were already partisan. Donald Trump's approach, in my opinion anyway, has really kind of driven a nail in the coffin of unity, and now the result is that both sides are more partisan than I remember, frankly. Can you unpack a little bit more your concept of being for people ahead of party? What do you think is the problem here?
So I think the problem is, like when I sit in on Democrat meetings, I've sat in on one where the one politician, I can't think of her name off the top of my head, but she stood up and she was giving her presentation about some things that they passed in last year's sessions. And when she left to pass some of them, they made it a bipartisan situation. It was dealing with the fentanyl, I believe it was. And so when she left, the board sat there and said, oh yeah, we have to get her voted out because we don't work with Republicans. And in my head, it was like, hold on. If that was a good bipartisan deal that worked best with everyone, then why are we saying things like this? And that was just that Democrat meeting, because I've been in other ones, like the further you go up east, there are more Democrats to me who work together that are more, what did you say, open-minded? And we need to be a little bit more open-minded and stop with the whole, if you agree with a Republican on this, then you're not Democrat or you're a bad person. That's stupid. We all should sit here. We all have the same common issues, the crime, accountability, housing. It's affecting us all. It's not affecting a party. It's affecting all of us. So we need to put those things to the side.
And we're in an environment now where if you reach across the aisle and you know, work in a bipartisan fashion, you risk being primaried by helping a more extreme candidate take your place. I think that's what some politicians are afraid of. You are running as a Democrat, though, not an independent, certainly not a Republican. Why are you on the Democratic ticket?
I'm on a Democratic ticket. I would say when it comes to budgeting and finances, I am a bit more conservative on those ideas. But when it comes to advocating and talking and speaking up for people, I guess you would say I would be more the Democrat. That would be more the Democrat in me. My college professor called me a woman's liberalist one time, but I don't think that, I'm not no extreme of anything, but I believe in standing up for people, making sure doors are open and that we have those equitable opportunities.
So you think that for social justice and things like that, you align more with the Democrats? Would that be accurate?
Yes.
Okay. Let me just ask you, why do you think, I kind of gave you my interpretation, why do you think that we are so divided, and that, why do you think that we have this situation where people don't want to reach across the aisle? What do you think we could change that we're doing that would change that? Or why do you think this is happening?
I think it's more awareness. Like when Inslee made this one announcement where he was saying anyone who voted for Trump, those ballot deniers, they're white supremacists. And that was not fair for him to label other citizens just because you disagree with them. And I took the opportunity, I've gone over into Okanagan in different places since I've been campaigning. And I've spoken with these people, and for them, they have one vision and view about what's going on in West Seattle and what's doing. So they're going off of the knowledge that's being fed to them by their party, and vice versa for the Democrat Party. People are going off what they assume, because when I went over there, everyone's like, don't go to Okanagan by yourself. They're going to lynch you. They're going to do these things. And me and my husband went, and then we made a post like, oh, yes, no, they liked us. We disagreed on topics like abortion and those things. But however, when we got to the bottom line, it was an understanding that when we're making laws, we're not making laws about your comfortable neighborhood. We're making laws that are to protect someone that it affects. And we were able to understand those. So when people have an awareness about what's going on, then people are more comfortable and understanding. And that's the problem that we have right now. Everyone's keeping being so divided by politicians that nobody's going to go over and talk to the other person to find out. We have this fear of talking to someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you think that instead of attacking each other as much as we're doing, we should be talking to each other more, right? And exposing, because I think it's a lack of exposure in a lot of situations where people don't know anybody on the other side. They have no friends on the other side. They don't communicate with their neighbors on the other side. You think that's an issue?
Yeah, I think that is an issue. Like, I won't even call someone white racist. If they grew up in a community that was predominantly white and they then never really interact with Black people, then they just don't know our culture. Doesn't mean that they're racist.
They just need to have their environment, right?
Right. So it's just bringing more awareness and building those bridges.
Right on. And so obviously you feel that your message might resonate with those people, right? You might be able to bring some votes over from the other side.
Yes. I believe I can bring a lot of votes from over there.
Right on. We're going to go to another break, come back with our final questions for Elona Kearney, candidate for Washington State Governor. All right, we're rocking it. We're going to have one more segment, Elona. It's going to be, instead of 10 minutes like the previous ones, it'll be about 5.5 minutes. So it's going to be about half as long.
Okay.
And a reminder that when I say goodbye, just stay on the line. It'll take me 30 seconds to wrap up the show, and then we'll say our final goodbyes.
Okay.
All right. Going great. 10 seconds. We're back for our final segment with Elona Kearney. Elona, unlike most American politicians, you do not accept donations from large corporations. Why is that?
Well, first off, I am, when I say I have a tagline that says, I'm not running for governor, we are. So I'm looking for us, the people, to represent, and we are running this campaign. And secondly, what people don't realize is when you look at the big candidates with all the big money, and their campaign says, oh, I don't accept money from big corporations. If you knew the PDC campaign laws, nobody's really supposed to be taking money from large corporations. It's illegal.
Even under Citizens United, which allows,
You
I
know,
mean, you have to go through what, dark money or through PACs or
yeah, through
what's your feeling
PACs,
on
and
that?
then some of them set up these things with the dark money, but I'm not doing those things because I want people to know that we're tired of having these politicians who take crooked money and they get exposed, but they're still there. So why not have a candidate who's just true and genuine to what we say?
Right. What are your small business policies? We have, a situation where basically you got a corporatocracy, right? Where rich corporate CEOs and shareholders basically can buy politicians. It's kind of the last conversation that we just had is and Amazon and these large platforms are kind of wiping out a lot of small mom and pop businesses. At least the ones that survived the pandemic. What are your policies regarding small business in Washington State? What would you do differently?
What I would do differently, it always goes back to making sure they are primary stakeholders at the table. Have them come and sit in these meetings where we're sitting down, is the small businesses, the people who have to purchase from these small businesses, and our state attorney general all sitting there at the table having a conversation, including large and corporations. So some policies that I do have are, like I said, about those incentives earlier, also giving grants for them to be able to get security, whether they are in a complex and they want to pitch in their grant and get a guard, or if they want to put up the camera system, however they want to work that. Also, give them grants as well to be able to diversify their portfolio, being able to get online, sell their things online, whatever they need to help them diversify, and also partner with the large corporations to be able to have them partner with smaller businesses to where they're not feeling like they're being pushed out, and creating a hub to help those smaller businesses to be able to be competitive.
Alona, we're getting down. We have about 2 minutes left. How can people contribute to and follow your campaign? And what final thoughts would you like to leave us with? Why should Washington? Why do you think that Washingtonians should give you their vote?
Yes, our website is peoplebeforeparty.com. And on all social media platforms, it's Elona for Gov, and that's FOR, not the number. And the reason why you should vote for me in 2024 is because you're not voting for me, you're voting for Washingtonians. And as I always say, I'm not running, we are running for governor.
Great, great. I just have we have just a little bit of time left, so I just want to say that you grew up as the oldest of five siblings to a Christian non-denominational pastor and a Jewish father. What effect do you think that history has, that legacy on your values as a candidate?
One thing that I think that it has is they've always taught me that God created us to be able to make our own choices and be accountable for them. And I know when people are out here are arguing, what is it, constitutionalists and all of these different things, then they also have to re remember that because you disagree with somebody's views or values does not give us the right to make laws to infringe upon those. So that's how I think it affects me.
Alona Kearney, candidate for governor, Washington State. Thank you so much for being on Hemp Present, and good luck with your campaign.
Thank you.
That concludes this installment of Hemp% on Cannabis Radio. When it comes to prohibition, you've got the right not to remain silent. Activism requires a voice. So find your voice and speak up for justice, because resistance is fertile. The Hemp% intro music is 7 Mile Beach by Joanne Rand, and the outro music is Take Back the Plant by Stickerbush. See you next time. Stay strong. All right.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also, that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.